Welcome to the Unknown Strength Podcast. I'm your host, Brenton, and with me is my co-host, Mac. Our aim on this show is to provide you high-quality content and unveil some insights into the minds and lives of high-level athletes and trainers and fighters. Today's episode was a very special episode, part of a series we're calling the Australian ADCC Competitor Series. So we had Lachlan Giles on our series today, a seasoned Australian grappler, veteran to ADCC. He'll be competing and representing Australia in Finland on September 23rd and 24th. He's also a physiotherapist. We had some really fantastic conversations with him around his philosophies on Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and his particular views on Jiu-Jitsu in general and where it's heading in Australia. So it's a really good podcast.
Yeah, it was an excellent interview. Really exciting having the only three competitors from Australia in 2017 ADCC competition. Only three guys come out of the same gym.
That's unbelievable. And all in the same gym as part of, you know, Absolute MMA in St. Kilda. It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's crazy, huh? So, exciting times. We're having those three guys as part of the Australian ADCC Competitors Series on this podcast. So, before we get into the podcast, super exciting announcement. The Unknown Strength, we are launching our first group online coaching platform, which is designed for beginners to strength training. It's a 12-week strength and conditioning programming coaching platform designed for strikers, grapplers, MMA fighters, all of the combat sport disciplines. You'll be kept fully accountable through the 12-week program. You'll learn a whole bunch. There'll be a whole bunch of instructional videos and lots of information. Just a value-packed 12-week package. So more information will be available soon. Can't give away too much right now. So stay tuned. In the meantime, here is the amazing interview with Lachlan Giles. Please enjoy.
Lachlan Giles, the Velocky Raptor, head coach of Absolute MMA St. Kilda, along with your partner and fiance, Livia. An absolute honour to have you on the show and the podcast. Welcome, Lachlan.
Thanks for having me.
So the Velocky Raptor, what's the story there? How did you earn that nickname?
Mostly because I look like a Velociraptor. I think it were the infamous Kip Dale might have been the one that started it. I think my posture is a little bit lent forward when I compete, or at least afterwards, or when I shake hands or something. And I think I had a big wide mouth smiling and I got short little arms. So all that combined together, I somehow look like a Velociraptor. A
hungry predator.
Yeah. And then I thought, well, if you're going to get a nickname, you might as well be the pretty much the coolest animal it's ever been. So I'll stick with it and we'll run with it.
I won't lie. It's my favorite dinosaur, yeah. So well done. Yeah. I've had a lot of nicknames in my time and none of them would I ever get plastered on a gym wall in association with jiu-jitsu. So I think you've done well there. So I think for those in the jiu-jitsu scene, you're definitely no stranger. You're one of Australia's best black belts in history, if not one of, you know, the very best. Certainly the best lightweight. Multiple time Pan Pacific champion, multiple time state champion. You won the Australian Jiu-Jitsu Grand Prix a few years ago as well. Multiple time Abu Dhabi World Pro Trials winner and Australian representative at the World Championships. And you're also an ADCC veteran, which is one of the themes of this show being the this mini-series, the Australians and Abu Dhabi series. And you also reached the semi-finals of the Eddie Bravo Invitational, securing an absolutely beautiful armbar along the way over Hani Yaya, losing to the eventual champion of that event, Gary Turnan. So suffice to say, you're definitely one of Australia's most decorated grapplers and recently touted as a dark horse at the World Championship. So you've got a lot going on there.
Do go on.
So not done there. Obviously, and you recently won the Freestyle Wrestling Championship of Australia, national title there.
Yeah. I'm training a lot of wrestling as well. Pretty much since I qualified for ADCC, which was about a year ago now, I've had that as my primary focus. So trying to do everything I can to be as prepared as possible for that.
So why wrestling? I mean, how does wrestling help when it comes to a jiu-jitsu tournament, ADCC? Well, I mean, it's more of a grappling tournament.
Yeah, that's right. It's a grappling tournament. The rules are different. You can definitely, if you're a good wrestler, you can definitely game the rules. And if you force an overtime, it starts standing. If they pull guard, they lose points. So there's a big incentive to work your takedown game that's not present in most jiu-jitsu competitions. So
I guess it makes it a bit more challenging in Australia. I mean, not taking anything away from some of the really amazing wrestlers in Australia, wrestling isn't as rich or deep in Australia, I guess, as like, yeah, for, you know, the US, for example, where you get some of the world's best wrestlers out of there. So, I mean, how do you go about sharpening up your wrestling skills in Australia?
Yeah, thankfully we've got some, well, at least in Melbourne in particular, we've got some very good wrestlers. So I've been training predominantly with Connor Evans and Telgat Ilyasov. Connor is going to be representing Australia at the Commonwealth Games this year. He's about 25. He's usually heavier than me, but he's cutting down to my weight. Mm. So he's really good for me to train with. He's very technical. He's been wrestling since he was a young kid. So, you know, just someone with that much experience is going to be much better than anyone you would face at ADCC. So getting experience training with someone like that, and then obviously Talgat as well. Like Talgat, he was in his competitive prime. He's an Olympian now, but in his competitive prime, he was one of the better wrestlers in the world. I think he got fifth at the Worlds at one point. So amazingly technical. I've never seen anyone, even, you know, I've shown him a few jiu-jitsu techniques. Mm. And when I show him a jiu-jitsu technique, it looks like he does it better than I do. he might not have seen it before. Just the way he moves, it's incredible. So, he's really good to learn from as well.
Every now and then I see him sneak into class with a white belt on, and it's just shames a lot of people. So
yeah.
It's just crazy. You've got someone at that level and still a white belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So, crazy. It's obviously one of those, you know, those that good old question, what do you walk around at?
Weight.
When it comes to your weight-wise.
It's slowly been going up, which I think is good. So I'm probably around just over 80 kilos now. I probably want to keep, you know, if I can get up to 81, 82 and then sort of cut 5 kilos down to 77 for the event. Would
so you've got to be 77 for this event dead on, yep.
Yeah, it's weighing on the morning of, so you can be a little bit dehydrated and then rehydrate. Not too much, but so that's my
so with your
ideal.
With your strategy to put on weight, how are you going about that?
Eating more. or trying to eat more. I don't know why, it's dumb not to, but I didn't used to have creatine. I started having creatine recently, which obviously has a lot of benefits in terms of your training as well. So I started taking creatine. And I don't do a lot of strength and conditioning. I've started doing a little bit of leg stuff because for me, I feel like for the wrestling and takedown side of it, it's more important. At least I feel like I'm well. My style of jiu-jitsu is kind of slow and grindy. I'm not too explosive. Mm. The wrestling, you need some explosiveness, and that's where I'm trying to get a bit more leg. Strength and power going. Yeah.
So I guess on the creatine though, what are the benefits you're finding with it? I mean, obviously, you know, you get a bit of weight, recovery, strength. I mean, what suddenly changed where you've started taking up creatine?
Well, being a PhD physio, to be honest, most things I hear about, I'm usually a very skeptical person.
Like, good place to be.
Anything anyone tells me about a supplement, usually I'm like, oh yeah, like, okay. But like, I say, like I'll listen to what someone has to say, but unless I've actually gone and read the research, I won't really jump on board the bandwagon so early. But I read the research on creatine, and you know, there's some pretty good evidence showing it does improve, muscular endurance and those sort of things. So, I don't see, when I've got a little bit of weight to play with like that, I just don't see any negative side to it. I think muscular endurance is, you can probably help us out more here with this, but in jiu-jitsu is probably one of the most important things, and probably one of the things that people lose the most in a competition. Like you know, you're holding your grip and then suddenly you're like, oh, I'm gassed. So if you can take something that helps with that a bit, even if it makes you a little bit heavier, like it carries a bit of water. But I still think the overall benefit is, you know, if you had to have creatine, but then, you know, cut extra fat, body fat, or whatever you had to do to get down to your weight division, I think that's a better option than not having it at all.
I was going to say, obviously a fellow PhD person, Reid Real, I think you recently posted an article or shared an article to do with creatine, a lot of those benefits as well. So
I read that after I said, oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear.
Reid's awesome. I mean, apparently, you know, there's a lot of significant benefits. I think Mac would be able to really chime in here, but a lot of things that highlighted to me were the improved brain function as well. So
yeah. Specifically for creatine, there's it's got a lot to do with ATP replenishment. Mm-hmm. You know, the mitochondrial benefits of it. I think that's, you know, the building blocks of energy, which leads into greater levels of endurance. At a cellular level.
So there's plenty
of science. It's like one of the most one of the most researched supplements in history, I think.
Yeah.
So,
I kind of feel like a bit of an idiot for not having to recently. So I feel like I've been missing out, but here we are.
There on the bandwagon. So obviously you mentioned, recently you did become actually a doctor of philosophy recently. So congratulations. What was your research focused on?
Thank you. Research was focused on patellofemoral pain, so particularly the quadriceps muscles. So we looked at the architecture to see if there's any difference in size of the quadriceps in people with and without patellofemoral pain. And then we did a randomized controlled trial, basically a research study comparing a traditional strength training program with a lighter load strength training program using blood flow restriction or occlusion training, as it's often called, where you kind of put a tourniquet around the leg. It limits blood flow to and from the muscle while you're doing exercises. It causes, actually, to be honest, they don't know exactly why it has the effect it does. There's a bunch of theories, but effectively, the muscle will fatigue at a faster rate than normal because it's not getting the oxygen to it, and it's also not getting rid of all the byproducts of working hard. And so they found that will improve muscle size and strength more so than doing the exact same load without blood flow restriction, but only with lighter loads. Which kind of, for just a healthy person, is probably irrelevant, because effectively, if you can just do heavy strength training, do it. But if you've got a knee injury that prevents you from doing that, and you can only lift a light load without risk, and you don't want to flare your knee up, then blood flow restriction is a good option there to build up muscle strength. So we looked at that and compared the results of that to a heavier strength training program in patellofemoral pain.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, I mean, so breaking that down is there anything you'd be able to impart, I guess, onto sort of the common person or layman who would be able to benefit from that kind of research?
I think it's a valuable tool for doing rehab for an injury. I don't think there's too much use for it for your average person who wants to get stronger or fitter.
I was just going to ask, what about someone like who's using it for more of a bodybuilding purpose, for hypertrophy?
Yeah.
From your findings, would there be anything to support, you know, building muscle using occlusion training?
There's definitely, like, it works. Without a doubt, it works. Mm. From everything I've read, you'll get better gains from just doing heavier sessions.
Yeah.
You could maybe do it in conjunction with a heavy strengthening program. I haven't looked at the research on whether adding occlusion as well as doing a heavy strength training program would be any better than just doing a heavy strength program. But probably the only other, apart from rehab, the other time I'd probably potentially recommend it is maybe even for jiu-jitsu athletes, or if someone's training so much, their load's so high, they just don't want to put more load through their body. Like, mm. for me, for a lot of my training, because I'm doing so much jiu-jitsu, like I'd probably like to do some strength and conditioning, but if I do it, that's a session that I then have to miss of jiu-jitsu. Yeah, whereas if you're doing lighter stuff with the occlusion, you might be less sore, and so I suppose you could potentially still come back and train the next day. You get less delayed onset muscle soreness with occlusion. So
that's always a good thing. How's your life panning out at the moment when you've got like ADCC coming up, multiple tournaments? Are you still operating as a physiotherapist these days, or is it kind of a reduced load now?
Very minimal, just like the occasional person here and there. But Liv and I will be setting up a practice pretty soon out of the gym, so I'll be doing a bit more work there.
All right, so bringing everything sort of back full circle into that sort of jiu-jitsu environment. So you've got you're the head coach of Absolute MMA St Kilda. You're teaching there, physiotherapy, and pretty busy over there.
Yeah, be good.
Yeah, fantastic. obviously, it definitely helps when going to a medical professional that understands and knows jiu-jitsu and can be a little bit more sympathetic to your injuries and a little bit more understanding when you sort of come in and say that you should have tapped your heel hook, but you didn't, and now your knee feels funny, so...
Yeah. Oh, there's absolutely benefits to. Yeah, I think if you're a jiu-jitsu athlete, and it would be the same for strength and conditioning. Yeah, you know, seeing someone who doesn't know what jiu-jitsu is they're not going to know what to do.
Yeah,
jiu-jitsu is like the strength and range of motion and everything is totally different to most sports, I think.
So, I think I know from my personal experience. When you do jiu-jitsu, it's not that injury is necessarily inevitable. It's just that when you're training any kind of sport with high impact and resistance, you're bound to sort of have some injuries. But the point I'm going to make is that going to many medical professionals in the past, you sort of explain what's happened and the injury and ask them about the recovery time. And the response you typically get is, maybe you should sort of look at a different sport or just step away. And you think, okay, I don't think you understand. There's a world full of memes about this that I'm still going to show up to training. I just want to know how bad it is.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So I'd love to obviously talk to you a little bit about ADCC. ADCC is held every 2 years. It's one of the biggest, if not pretty much the biggest no-gi tournament in the world, one of the biggest jiu-jitsu tournaments ever. It's essentially like the Olympics of jiu-jitsu. So my understanding is the first 5 minutes, they don't actually score it. And following that is a round where there actually is scoring. So first of all, how's your preparation thus far been for ADCC?
Really good. Yeah. Obviously we'll see how I go on the day, but I won't look back on this and say, my training wasn't right. I feel like I've done, I feel like I'm putting in the time, doing the right things I need to do. So we'll see.
Awesome. So you competed at the ADCC in 2015 as well. So.
Yep.
What did you take away from the experience of the 2015 ADCC?
Well, actually, it was funny. I fought Durinho.
Gilberto Burns,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, Gilbert Burns. And I think I was speaking to someone before and they were talking about how good his takedowns were. And that kind of made me go, I don't want it to go into overtime.
Right.
And I think it was about 9 minutes in. So there was 1 minute until overtime. And there was no score on the board yet. I was in guard, and I was like, "Oh, I've got to." That was my mindset was, "I've got to make something happen." And I just tried to go for a leg lock that wasn't there, and that gave him my back and got armbarred from that. Whereas I would think this time around, I'm wanting the overtime,
yeah.
You know, like
wrestling.
I'd be like, cool, like one more minute, get the overtime. I've been wrestling. Like, I don't know if I'm a better wrestler than him, but I feel like, to be honest, a lot of these top jiu-jitsu guys, I highly doubt I'm going to like pass someone like Lucas Lepre's guard and take the back and choke. But on the feet standing, like I think, you know, that's, I got a much higher chance
of
scoring from there. So that's, yeah, sounds like I'm just trying to stall. I still want to do jiu-jitsu, but but try to out-wrestle the good jiu-jitsu guys. And obviously, you know, well, on top of that, I've worked a lot on the leg lock, heel hook game as well. Heaps since 2 years ago. So I feel like that's an area where a lot of the good IBJJF competitors are lacking.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
Excellent. So who would win 2015 Lockie versus 2017 Lockie? Who, how, and why? Obviously, you're going to...
2017, buy whatever I want.
Yeah.
No, I definitely would. So I'd be pretty confident.
So 2017, yeah. Lockie's going to out-wrestle you, throw on some heel hooks. Obviously got some other weapons you've been training with.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I think progress is pretty steady in jiu-jitsu. 2 years of hard training, I think.
Yeah.
I'd be very disappointed in myself if I lost. Well, in my... current self, but I'd be happy with my former self.
You'd be proud of your former self for bringing it. So, I mean, in 2 years, I mean, what's changed in terms of the sport? And you've mentioned some of your adaptations.
ADCC or?
I guess across the board, ACC specifically, but obviously you've had to make some adaptations to follow with the changes in the game and where the focus has been on the styles. So,
yeah. In the actual sport itself, as opposed to for me, the leg lock games, probably in the last 2 years, people have caught on to that. I don't think, to be honest, I haven't seen many, apart from the Danaher guys and some of the 10th Planet guys are sort of really actively playing it. I haven't seen a lot of the other IBJJF guys like jump into on the heel hook bandwagon. I know they must be aware of it and they're trying to train it, but that's to me is the biggest difference in Nogi in particular.
I think one thing I noticed is a lot of at least there's a bit of a trend where you see a lot of competitors they try to sort of shut down the leg locks as opposed to getting really immersed in it. And one thing I've noticed with you and the school you're running is some of your top competitors like yourself and Craig and even Livia just going absolutely insane with the leg locks lately. Craig featuring on EBI landing a lot of heel hooks and knee bars and stuff. So, I mean, the leg lock game really hasn't been historically a major part of Australia's jiu-jitsu. So, at least to my knowledge, I mean, we haven't had a Dean Lister around the corner or a Danaher that we can go and pick their brain. So I dare say that the success you and your team have been having, that's invariably going to be changing the landscape of Australia's jiu-jitsu and heel hooks. So what are your thoughts on that, and how have you actually gone about picking up the leg lock game when you don't have access to those resources immediately?
You watch tape. That's how you learn. You watch competition footage. I used to watch more in, like, just generally to learn. I used to watch more instructionals, and I think it's good if it's a good instructional, they'll tell you what they're thinking and not just show you a move. And that's great to see, like, what someone actually, what's their game plan from this position and so on. But when you watch, I used to probably watch more instructionals and get my information from that. But now I think if you watch enough tape, the situations where you're having trouble, you can see the best. You watch Eddie Cummings or a Gary Tonon, and like when they get here, because if I'm having trouble finishing the heel hook from a certain position, and then I watch Gary Tonon or Eddie Cummings, I know the people they're fighting are going to be doing the same sort of defenses. So how are they dealing with it? You watch that, and you try to copy it, and then also you everyone kind of has their own variants too. So I think I have some stuff now. Like, I think Craig and I both do stuff a bit differently to what we've seen on the tape. Like, a bit different to the Danaher guys. And Craig and I are different as well. So, like, I think we've found what suits our body type.
So, have you come up with anything or innovated anything, I guess, in that leg lock space? Which I think you're hinting at, but...
Yeah, I suppose, like, I've not innovated in, like, a new type of heel hook or something like that. Just positions that... I feel like a position I feel more comfortable in that you wouldn't, I feel like I can attack better from a certain spot that perhaps a Cummings or a Tonon would try to force it to a different aspect of the heel hook game. So
I guess
it's not that they don't use, they would probably use the same techniques. It's just my emphasis might be on a different part of it.
And I guess you optimize it depending on your own body type, right? And your own leg length, like Craig's 6 foot, whatever, and seems to still be growing, whereas you're 5'10", 5'9", and sort of a more stocky build. So it's going to play out very differently.
Yeah, I agree. I think you play a different... That's what I find anyway. There's certain positions I'm moving away from because I find it... hard to work, and other ones that I'm moving towards, just because of the, you know, especially because I roll with Craig a lot, so we're both trying to you know, hook each other at the same time. So there's some positions that he can use really well on me, and I try to do the same on him, and it just doesn't work. And the same in the other end, but it's usually just him bashing me. So can we cut that bit out?
that's quite a feat there as well. So Hillhooks, I mean, they've really been a controversial you know, point of discussion. I mean, it seems to still be a raging point of discussion, and you're seeing them getting introduced to at an increasing rate into different tournaments. Like, grappling industries are really adopting them, especially from lower belts. And both yourself and Craig put out a really informative video on YouTube recently. I mean, you've got a fantastic YouTube channel, by the way, that Absolutely Amazing St. Kilda, with the syllabus outlined for free. I mean, I don't know why you'd go to any other channel now. It's just all there. I mean, all the knowledge is there. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
So that segue aside, so you've really touched on some of the mechanics and some of the risks and how to be a bit cautious with heel hooks. And you know, it's been a very polarizing topic. So I guess if you could sort of summarize, really, what is your view on heel hooks and training with them and utilizing them, and where should they be legal?
I think they should be. Oh, like, as in what belt should they be legal? I think it should just be, like, I think it's nice that it's in no-gi. I think you could do them in gi as well, actually. Like, to be honest, I pretty much never train in gi because I'm almost never going to do a competition that has gi heel hooks. But I think, like, it's nice. You have to have some exposure to them. So definitely no-gi. I would think purple belt and up in competition, and probably start learning from blue belt and up. I think it's, yeah, there's definitely risks. Like, obviously, you know, it's going to do a fair bit of damage to a knee. I don't think usually by blue belt, you know, if someone gets a blue belt, you're confident that they have enough self-control to, like, part of being a blue belt should you have enough self-control to know when to tap, and also that if you're doing a heel hook, that you're not going to let your ego get in the way, and if someone's not tapping for whatever reason, you're going to let go. There'll be some people on their first day at white belt who will have that same attitude, but if you just let all white belts suddenly start doing heel hooks in training, I think you're also going to then have the people who aren't, who you haven't had enough of time to influence and make sure they're being safe with it. So, I think learn them and do, maybe learn what they are at white belt. Train with them from blue belt up. Compete from purple belt up.
It's really funny. I think I remember my second week of jiu-jitsu, I was heel hooking everyone and I had no idea what I was doing. I just remember I watched a video on it and I remember making people scream and being like, oh, this is awesome. Like, this is a really, really effective technique, and I'm really glad I actually never blew out anyone's knee with them. So,
that's the thing. Like, when I was, I think I was about 18 or 19, and this is back. Obviously, I started a long time ago, and, you know, I didn't even know what jiu-jitsu competition rules were. So we trained with heel hooks, and I remember, like, this is just the outside heel hooks, but I always used to just roll out of them. Yeah. And I was like, oh, like, every time I've rolled out, that's fine. And I remember George Sotiropoulos got me in a good one, and I tried to roll, and it didn't work, and it just heard like a loud crunch.
Oh.
Thankfully, it was just my ankle and not my knee. But, like, I was just dumb, and I thought that, you know, I was young, and I was like, I always roll out of them. Like, not having the common sense at that age to understand that it could actually be a serious injury. So that's why I don't think it's good to just straight out start rolling with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we already answered this. So, I mean, you're one of the more studious jiu-jitsu practitioners around. How are you keeping yourself informed and up to date with jiu-jitsu now? So you've mentioned you're watching more matches or techniques, and you're not subscribed to any sort of anything like Marcelo Garcia in Action or Mendez Bros Online or anything like that.
I used to subscribe to both of those, but I don't at the moment, actually. I have phases. I think it's important to have phases where you study tape and try to try and emulate a style of someone that you're watching. And then I also think you want to then have time not watching anything and just find out, like, get your own little angles and find out what works for you. Because if you're always just trying to copy someone, you kind of, you know, you end up a poor version of them. Yeah, a poor version of Marcelo is still pretty bloody good. But it's hard to get as good as Marcelo by, I'm never going to get as good as Marcelo, but I guess what I'm trying to say is just trying to copy what he does instead of playing around and developing a bit more yourself. Yeah, just whatever works for you. So time doing both, I think, is important.
So in something you run at one of your classes that's on your timetable, I believe, is a video analysis class. What's the story behind that? And has it really had much of an impact on your jiu-jitsu and your students?
Yes, we actually... We haven't got our TV set up since we moved to St Kilda, so we haven't run that since we moved. But I do want to get one started again. So the idea was each week... Well, I originally planned for, like... I wanted, like, some of the brown and black belts that train with us to, like, you know, each week someone different comes in and studies something, but everyone was lazier, or maybe I was too lazy to... force them to do that, so ended up just being me. but that was good. You were talking about my armbar on Hani Yaya. Like, that came from watching, we did a video analysis of Sanjay, the way he set up his from his Kimura, how he set up his armbar.
Sanjay
Ribeiro.
Okay. Yep.
And there's like a little clip, and we watched that, and there was a few little details in there that changed my Kimura and armbar game a little bit. And then, you know, I used that to submit a ADCC world champion.
I think you're even lucky enough to land it on me once. I mean, that's quite a feat.
Yeah, that's right. If you can pick up anything that's different to that someone high level's doing, that's different to what you're doing, there should be some, you'd hope there's some utility in it, especially if you've got a broad enough game.
So it's obviously
you're asking like how my game's evolved as well, sort of. I'm directing it that way anyway.
Please.
I think I'm starting to do less things now. I had this idea in my head that like I would solve like all of jiu-jitsu, and like I would know exactly when to play spider guard, and then when that wasn't work, I'd transition to Delahiva and reverse Delahiva, and you know, like kind of be like no matter where they go, I'm in my element,
intricate web.
Whereas I've probably started more just trying to funnel everything to my game, you know, like I like being here, how do I get them there, not, you know, be good from everywhere. So I'm definitely playing less, probably with the Nogi folks as well, but less like spider, Delahiva, open guards, and just trying to get it to
interesting. So really taking a sort of a handful or a small selection of techniques to the next level, rather than sort of diversifying yourself across a wide breadth and being good at everything but master of none. Now you're sort of just, you know, having an A+ game for those handful of techniques.
I think there's like an ideal, and like that was, I was trying to working on an ideal where like, I don't know, have you got like a AI computer or something, and you said like work out when to do what sweep? It would probably come up with like a really broad like algorithm, where no matter where you are, you've got like you're in your element.
For everything.
But I just don't think that worked as well as just, you know, you look at all the top guys, they've got like one guard, two guards they play, and that's it. They just force it there and they do it. And from what I've heard, it's the same in judo, same in wrestling. They just have their moves and you do it.
You think of Ronda Rousey, she's got a hip throw and then armbar, so it's, you know, that took it to the highest level.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's countless other examples like that as well. Speaking of which, Absolute MMA has, as far as gyms go, has to be pound for pound one of the absolute best gyms in Australia. You know, you've got world champions oozing from every nook and cranny. So, what's going on with this gym? What's happening? What are you guys doing to them?
Just training lots. I don't know. I think jiu-jitsu is contagious. If you like it and you show that you're passionate about it, then, and you can convey why you're passionate about it, then other people will follow that, and then it's contagious like that, I think.
So I want you to put on your doctor philosophy hat here. What what makes jiu-jitsu so intriguing to you? Like, why do you love it? What is it about jiu-jitsu that's just amazing?
All right, that's a big question to answer. I think, like, the mental side of it is, to me, is the best. Like, the problem solving, you try to get something to work, it doesn't work, you think about it, you can try different angles, you work with it, and you come back and it works. Like, I think that side of it, I think it's just great for teaching you, like, you get a lot of, like, positive feedback in that, like, you work a move and you'd be horrible at it, and then, you know, you just stick at it, and then 2 or 3 months later, it's one of your main moves. And I think there's plenty of things that aren't in life that aren't like that, or, like, at least, it's definitely worth putting in work, but you don't always see the same results. Whereas jiu-jitsu, I just think you get that reward for your hard work, and that's why I like it. I think we do at our grading, we did a belt challenge. I don't know if you've heard about the belt challenge.
I'm going to guess you lose your belt, get demoted if you lose.
No, not quite like that.
So I'm never showing up. I'll lose it very quick.
So we give the white belts a chance to win themselves a blue belt.
Or to take home, put it in frame?
Like that. Yeah, they get their blue belt. And the blue belt's a chance to get a purple belt.
Right.
So we line everyone up in... like, you partner up in order of your rank. So the black belts starts with the black belts. They pair up with the other black belts next to them. And it goes down in the line, you know, browns pair up, purple. And if a white belt, if you win, you move up a level. Just in rolling, yeah? So you go, you fight the...
So you move up the line.
You move up in the line, and if you lose, you move down in the line.
So I'm visualizing at the end of this class, is going to be everyone's going to be ranked in order from one end of the wall to the other.
No, not like that. It's not like... I don't want people to feel like there's pressure to win. So if you want to just... Yeah, you could just be there to roll or whatever, but if you want to try and win
an
your...
opportunity for a belt.
Yeah. So the white belts love it. So if you can get past all the blue belts, beat all the blue belts, you get your blue belt.
Yeah.
But no one's won yet. We actually had someone come really, really close in the last one. Yeah,
that must have been a really exciting moment with a lot of cheers and a lot of tension.
Yeah. But I kind of think that's like a good... Yeah, you know, in theory, no one should win. Jiu-jitsu, if jiu-jitsu works, like, the more effort you put in, you get rewarded for that. So if you're a blue belt, you know, you should be the majority of the time beating a white belt, and the blue belts don't beat the purples, and the purples don't beat the browns, and so on. And that's obviously a generalization, and there's a bell curve. There's some people who are amazing as a blue belt or as a white belt. That's probably one of the things I like about jiu-jitsu. Like, you put in the hard work and you get rewarded for it. I've been training 15 years. I don't think I'm like a amazingly special athlete, or like, I don't think it's my body type or like my strength or anything like that why I've managed to do well in Australia anyway. I just think I've trained hard for 15 years. And
being persistent.
You point to someone who's put in more time, then I'll, yeah. If someone said, why did you win? I'd say, well, have they put in as much time and effort as I have? I'm sure there might be some, but I definitely, you know, probably the last 7 or 8 years I've trained nearly twice a day, every day. So
amazing. Something that really stands out, I remember you said when at a black belt grading where you graded Craig Jones to black belt, you explained, I guess, your approach and methodology and I guess your philosophy on what the belt means. And you sort of said that, you know, when you're giving out a belt, you sort of look at it as you want to hand out a belt and grade them to that level, having been better than what you were when you were that same belt. So when you give Craig his black belt, you know, you anticipate that he's a better black belt on that day than you were when you received your black belt.
Mm-hmm. It's the only way to ensure the standard is held.
Yeah, I mean, obviously
it's hard to, I mean, I don't know how do you actually know? I can't get my self from 5 years ago and roll, but I can get myself now. It's pretty good. So.
But that 2015 Lockie is getting smashed by 2017 Lockie.
I think that's unfortunately, you know, in 30 years or 40 years, I think I don't know what a jiu-jitsu black belt will mean. I don't know. Like, I think there's going to be too many people who have got their black belt too easily, who are giving out black belts to other...
diluting the integrity of the belt.
Yeah, and that, so, I don't know. For me, that's what I run by, to try to keep my standards high. I see no reason why, like, there's way more knowledge out there than there was, you know, even now, than there was when I got my black belt. Like, there's no reason why someone can't be more better at jiu-jitsu. I'm not even saying, like, as like you have to be able to roll better than I did, but just your knowledge. Like, the knowledge should, there's more knowledge there. There's no reason by the time someone's a black belt, like, they shouldn't know more than I did when I got my black belt, I think.
Fantastic. So looking, when you look at the Australian jiu-jitsu scene and its present state, what are your thoughts there?
It's awesome. It's coming along well.
Yeah.
We've got some really good grapplers up and coming and already established. So just watch ADCC. I think we're going to see some good results.
Yeah.
Just this time around even.
So ADCC obviously is part of the mini-series. We've got yourself. You're in the 77-kilo division. Then you've got Craig Jones, who's usually around your weight anyway, but he's going to be fighting at 88 kilos, I believe.
Yeah, he's heavy now.
He's a big boy now, and he's shaved his head.
Asking
and just
about
looks
that on
mean.
The podcast, yeah.
Hey, if you're bigger than me, you're on steroids. That's my philosophy. Yeah. I last I heard was the Kit Dale meal plan, so we'll have to ask him about it. And then you've got yourself, Craig, and Kit Dale. So, obviously you're going to be backing your boys to do really well. I mean, you're training with them every day. You're seeing what they're up to. So, should be exciting.
Yep. I think we can do well now. And, you know, there's heaps of up and coming grapplers as well. So, yeah, Australia will. The hard thing is, it's not just Australia. The whole world's getting better, you know. Like, the standards, it's ridiculous. That is what it is.
I guess that's what happens as well. Someone brings something exciting and new and innovative, or wins in a certain fashion, and then everyone's able to sort of study that, analyze it, break it down, take away those key learnings, and then suddenly they're not so special anymore unless they bring something new. I think Marcelo Garcia, when he brought out his book on, I think he was talking about these guillotines, but no, so the... After he'd sort of won ADCC for the first time, he suddenly came back with a complete omoplata game. Omoplata's just, they were good. There were people who did them well, but then Marcelo Garcia came back and was just, you know, made the omoplata amazing.
Yeah.
And he said that everyone had studied his game, so he had to start doing things differently.
I mean, all the information's there for there to be, someone from Australia to become a black belt world champion. Obviously, look at our women's results as well.
Ridiculous. Like,
amazing. So, I mean, the women are already competing and pushing the black belts now. So, just Abu Dhabi Pro, we had Liv and Jess both medaled in the brown black.
Jess Reyes and Livia Gluchowska.
Yeah.
Crazy. Both here. With you, when you have a brown and black belt merge division, and they were, but they both brown belts at the time. I know Liv was.
Now, Jess had her black. Yeah.
She just got her black, though, as well. So, pretty fresh.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So given that, you know, you've got three of you in the same club from Australia going to be heading over to Abu Dhabi, are you spending a lot of time talking about the strategy when it comes to something like ADCC, or are you just training hard and seeing sort of what eventuates from that?
We have a club, we've been doing this for at least the last year, like an ADCC specific rules specific class, so we train ADCC rules and scenarios. We're training strategy.
Obviously can't. I mean, I wouldn't want you to divulge anything. I want to see an Australian win. So
yeah,
I want to see you guys do well.
It's not like the strategy is not like some super secret. Just learning the rules and how to try to play with them within them.
So I'm really loving, like, just pushing you with some of these questions and throwing out the hypotheticals. I don't know why I've chosen to throw this at you. But let's say I'm going to give you $1 million right now, and I want you to drop some bets on some of the rising stars on Australia. So who's going to make you rich? And no, obviously you can't run off with that $1 million. I'm giving $1 million. You're going to make some bets. Who from Australia is going to be who's some of the rising stars that are
who's going to be...
not just this ADCC, I'm talking to say the next 5-10 years.
Oh, gee, I'll end up missing people and then they'll be disappointed. okay, right now... Oh, jeez. So I'm going to think... I'm going to look... Like, for the people who... I'm going to just talk about the people who I think... Who aren't black belts yet and, yeah. and are up and coming. I think we've already got, you know, some guys that are in ADCC who can do really well and who go to the Worlds and do really well. And
they're already black belts, yeah.
So let's talk coloured belts. There's so Levi.
Mm.
Yeah, really good. That guy.
Levi Jones.
Yeah, Levi Jones Leary. Amazing. He's really good. He's training at Unity for pretty much 6 months per year. He's probably sacrificed as much as you can sacrifice for jiu-jitsu. So weirdly doesn't seem to get, like, he gets results in everything just at the Worlds. He just has either bad luck or a bad day or something. But that guy will, you know, whether he wins the color belt Worlds or not, like, he'll be a competitor at black belt Worlds for sure. All right, who else have we got? So young guys, like, even at our club, we've got, like, Hugh and Seth, who they're like 15, 16. Cooper. Oh, Cooper. How good's Cooper?
Burnham.
Yeah, yeah. Cooper Burnham.
The Terminator.
That guy's, yeah, he's going to go really far. He's so, yeah, it's, I can't.
He's doing absolutely everything. I think what he's just turned 17. Mm-hmm. You know, he does wrestling.
Yeah. His birthday party is tonight.
Oh, really?
Happy birthday, Cooper.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Cooper. Cooper, like, that guy's going to go really far. We've got, you know, I think a little bit younger than Cooper, or at least, like, in terms of physical maturity from our gym, Seth and Hugh. We've got even another younger girl, Stella, who's coming up, and she's really good. But there's, I'm just talking about people I know through
through
Absolute. But there's people everywhere around Australia. Tom Calladine he's a Gracie Baja guy. I've never rolled with him or anything. I've just seen him compete. He's had some good matches. I think he's similar weight to Levi. I'm going to miss people. So no, I'm just going to stop there.
That's fine.
Sorry, anyone I miss.
You're all awesome. So obviously, yeah, there's a lot of exciting athletes bursting onto the scene at the moment. So as far as mindset, I mean, you've been competing in jiu-jitsu from what seems like day one. I think when I first started doing jiu-jitsu, you were already, you know, kind of top of the tree, winning things and everything. So I think for a lot of people, competitions are really nerve-wracking, and especially for myself, I find them to be, you know, it's a very anxiety-inducing experience. I've heard you speak on this before, but perhaps since becoming a doctor of philosophy, you could tell us a little bit more about this actual competitive philosophy in regards to the pressures of competitions and how you actually deal with it.
How do you deal with it? The pressure of competition. You just compete more. you just got to compete more. Usually, like, everyone gets nervous. You just got to accept that. You just accept it and you go and do it. And no matter how nervous you are, like, as soon as you finish, especially if you didn't do well, you're like, oh, I want to go, you know, I want to do it again straight away. So I think...
I've had that feeling many times.
Yeah, if you have a long period off competing, like, definitely the most... I think I injured my knee and I had a year off competing or a year and a half off competing.
How long ago was this?
Oh, probably 10 years ago.
Right.
A year or a year and a half off competing, and I came back and I was so nervous. But each time it gets less, but it doesn't go away. So
that's, I guess, so what you're sort of inferring, it's more about becoming familiar with that environment and the routine and ritual.
I don't know. So maybe you can, Liv reckons she's, like, convinced herself that she loves it. You know, she's just can't wait to get out there. Oh, fair enough. once you get a hold of them, that all goes away. It's
what
now, like,
can't get a hold of them.
Well, yeah. No one's gonna win then. Once the match starts, you just got to focus on the match. You don't think about your nerves, but it's beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, you fought against some pretty high level competitors. I mean, So some people that come to mind, I'm thinking, I mean, you fought against Roberto Satoshi's, you know, one of the, if I'm not mistaken, one of the most exciting grapplers, in my opinion. And you know that probably from the second you slap hands and bump fists, if he doesn't power up Dragon Ball Z style and he gives you that opportunity.
That was my mistake. That's where I should have gone at it.
Yeah, just got, well, you got to, you know, obviously turn Super Saiyan before he does.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, you're standing across the mat from someone like that, and you know they're going to come out the gates with you like a bat out of hell. I mean, obviously, you're going to feel some different sort of levels of anxiety and sort of your approach to them. I mean, surely you've sort of felt some kind of, you know, a fair bit of tension in those moments, or...
Yeah, you know what? It's... I think nerves are... Like, nerves are... You're worried about your performance, and I think a lot of it's... unfortunately, it shouldn't be, but it's more external, like... You know, what are people gonna think of me if I lose or whatever? Which is actually, no one actually cares. Man, like that's the thing. Like no one cares. Everyone, the people who you train with know how good you are, or you know how well you're rolling and that sort of stuff. Like how you compete on one match that they're watching, it doesn't change their opinion of you in terms of that. But just going back on that, because I think that's a lot of where the nerves come from. I actually probably end up feeling more nervous going against, you know, if I've got everyone watching and it's a match I should win, I'll get more nervous than, like, if I'm coming against Satoshi and I'm not the favorite, I'm usually more excited than
more
nervous.
More to gain as opposed to lose.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, if he gets me, like, people are going to be like, oh, Satoshi's amazing. That's the, you know, you go through all the stuff in your head, but, you know, not to... At the same time, you actually got to try not to, you know, over, which I think I've done, unfortunately. I think that cost me at Worlds, actually. But sometimes you...
That paralysis by analysis.
Yeah, you're kind of like, oh, wow, you know, he's really good from here or there. Yeah. You know, like I got Tavia Souza got me in his clothes guard, and I forgot that he plays it. And then as soon as he got me there, I was like, oh, that's right, he loves his clothes guard. And He reached for my leg, and the reaction I normally would do is kind of posture forward to try and open it. But I was like, oh, but he's really good. I don't want to risk getting swept. And I kind of went back down, and that was disastrous.
So you kind of assumed he actually had the answer for everything, and sort
of just kind of like, oh, like it was a second guessing. I was like, this is what I would normally do, but will that work against, you know, Otavio Souza?
Multiple time world champion.
So that was a good lesson for me, actually. Just do what you do, and if they beat it, so be it. You need to fix it, you know. Don't try to change your game based on, you know, where you think someone's gonna impose their game. Just do what you do.
I mean, if you're gonna win, you're gonna generally win with your game anyway, so you might as well bring them in there as soon as possible. So I'd like to ask you this, because you're a very down to flat earth kind of guy. So what do you see as the perils of role models and jiu-jitsu heroes? So what's some advice you'd give to people who actually look up to their champions in the community? And I guess, you know, what you sort of referred to was like hero worship.
That's a good question. So you're talking about like, okay, so first of all, just generally, like being a black belt in jiu-jitsu doesn't mean your opinion about anything unrelated to jiu-jitsu is any more valid. So,
despite what we tell people.
Like I think when you're, especially like you run a club or you've got like influence over people, like often suddenly that just, I don't know why, but that means you're allowed to voice your opinion on other issues and people will listen more.
Less skeptical.
Which is a shame. So I try, and being someone who coaches at a club, I try to actively make sure I don't do that too much. As in terms of like try to pretend that I know what I'm talking about in other areas that I don't. That's right, Michael Horrigan, if you listen to this. But then in terms of role models in jiu-jitsu, this is an area where I think it's pretty bad. There's this whole like, you know, don't tap, break your leg or your
And the celebrating
foot or,
of not tapping.
That's that's a decision that people at the top of their game are making. I still wouldn't personally, like, you know, the people who are doing that, they obviously want it more than me, or they're ignorant to the what's going to become of their joints when they're older. Either they're aware that their joints are going to be ruined and they're going to have some serious problems when they're older, and they don't care. They'd rather win the match, which is fair enough. That's an informed decision. Or they're unaware that of that. Which is, and in the end, like, if you make that choice and you're competing for a black belt world championship medal, then that's your choice. I just don't think it's a good... you're being a very good role model to the purple belts and blue belts who you see then go into, you know, a local competition and get caught in a straight footlock, and they're like, "Oh, I won't tap," you know. And it's like, well, you don't even do jiu-jitsu professionally.
You just compensate.
And I won't name the coach, but I've seen at the Worlds, I saw a guy who looked probably about 35, a blue belt, got caught in a straight footlock, and he tapped. And his coach was like, "Why'd you tap?" And he's like, "It popped." And he's like, "It'll usually like hurt when it pops, and if it pops a second time, it stops hurting. Just keep going." And I'm like, "Yeah, you're saying that because you're a multiple-time world champion, but this guy doesn't look
he's gotta walk to school in the morning.
Yeah, he looked like he's like 35. Like, he just looked like he was, you know." Oh, I'll jump in the worlds, you know? Like,
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's an issue I have. And then, yeah, obviously, there's the steroids stuff too, which I think is another bad example that's being set. Seems, I don't know, people idolize people regardless of the fact that they've been, which doesn't happen in others, I don't know, like any other sport. Like Lance Armstrong gets caught and then everyone's like, screw him. But in jiu-jitsu, it seems you can get caught, and then 2 years later, everyone's like, oh, like, isn't he the best?
Yeah, they're celebrated for admitting it.
Yeah. So, anyway, so be it.
Very interesting perspective. So, I mean, what's next for you, Lockie? You've got ADCC coming up. I mean, really, really exciting tournament. Really excited to see you guys on that. You got ACC, any other tournaments coming up?
I'll do Nogi Worlds.
When's Nogi Worlds?
I don't think they've released the date. It'll probably be about a month after ADCC. So.
All right.
And then...
You have to remember not to heel hook everyone.
I know. It's annoying.
I was going to say, when you spend so much of your week really refining your game around those rules, I guess it does make the crossover, because you think, I can easily imagine it, you train the gi, you take off the gi, and you think, okay, heel hook's time.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you've got to go, wait, hang on, no.
Yeah, it'll be a little adjusting, but that'll be all right. So I don't know.
Do you feel like you would be better in a no-gi IBJJF setting as opposed to ADCC, or do you think the leg locks and the rules...
If I'd say the two areas I have over a lot of the IBJJF competitors would be the leg locks and hopefully the wrestling. So ADCC... kind of in allows more of that, so mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that said, it doesn't mean it's easier to you know medal at ADCC than Nogi Worlds. Nogi Worlds generally has a much smaller talent pool. You don't always get the top guys going in it, and the divisions are smaller, so people are separated. ADCC is really a combination of two weight categories put into one, so you get that's why it's really exciting. You get the best of from people fights you wouldn't normally see because they're in different weights, and then suddenly they're fighting each other. So
fantastic. Really, really appreciate you being on the show, Lockie. I guess now's the opportunity for another final thoughts or thanks towards sponsors. I mean, the people sort of bring you here.
Huge thanks to my main sponsor, MA1. They're just awesome. Thanks to Liv for supporting me with all this. If anyone wants to come down, please have a roll at Absolute St Kilda, or Absolute anywhere. They're all good. Collingwood CBD. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, it's been good.
Awesome. You've got, as I said, you've got an outstanding YouTube. I mean, that's That's on. I won't lie. I've been referring to that to go, okay, if I've got any sort of questions, I want to comb through that and make sure all my basics and even the advanced stuff is up to scratch. It's really solid and it's getting a lot of traction from what I've seen.
Yeah, it's growing, which is cool.
And I don't know, did you ever imagine being an internet superhero?
No. I just put out my half guard seminar up there actually. If someone wants to check that out, it's a seminar plus some footage from a seminar I ran plus some just other footage that I didn't get to convey everything. So I put some more stuff on. I think it's like $13. If you want to buy it, go for it. I think it's good.
I'll let you know.
That's great. And that's on the Absolute MMA St Kilda
YouTube channel. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yep. That's awesome. All right. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time today, man. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome.
Cheers.